Turn to Matthew 18. Most parents like to talk about their children until they get old enough to where they wish they weren't born. Most grandparents like to talk about their children. And I believe God likes talking about His family. We're going to look at Jesus when He's talking about His family. That's what I'm going to try and preach on when Jesus talks about His family. A little bit of Matthew chapter 18. Look on in verse 1. At the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? The disciples are always worried about who's going to get the best, who's going to get the highest in the kingdom. What's on their mind, what's in their heart, what they're thinking about constantly is the Messiah has come, and He's going to set up the kingdom, and we're going to get a high position. And they not only thought about the position that they were about to get, they thought, and the prestige they were about to enjoy, but they were actually arguing about who was going to get the highest position. When Jesus starts His kingdom, when He finally overthrows Rome, who's going to be the one that deserves the highest place, the highest seat in this kingdom? It's pretty bad when you want the highest or want the best, but when you think you deserve it, that's really bad. And these disciples thought they deserved it. And in these verses, Jesus first, talking about His family and talking about the disciples, is going to talk about how He promotes His disciples. In the world that we're living, promotion means you're making it up the ladder. You're exalting yourself. You make sure you're in the forefront. You make sure the boss notices you. You make sure that you're the one that's exalting yourself. But Jesus is about to show them and us in His kingdom the opposite is true. It is not self-promotion that's important, but it's self-abasement, the lowering of self. We need to realize this morning that it's not about us. Even this thing of salvation is not about us. We make it always, we're the focal point. Jesus Christ died for me, and He did. Jesus came for me, and He did. Jesus forgave my sin, and He did. But we need to remember this salvation is all about Him. It's to His glory. It's to His honor. He did it for Himself too. He wanted to. He came for us. He came to die for us. And He's the one that deserves the glory, and He's the one that deserves the honor. None of us at all. Here's these disciples, they're wanting promotion, they're wanting prestige, they're wanting power. And Jesus is about to bust their bubble in verse 2 and 3. It says, And Jesus called a little child unto Him and set him in the midst of them and said, Verily I say unto you, except ye be converted and become as little children, ye shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. He said to His disciples, Don't you remember how you got in? You're talking about wanting to be promoted. You're talking about you think you deserve the best. When the kingdom does come, you expect the best seats, the best authority, to be able to rule and to reign. Could I remind you how you got in? You became like a little child. He uses the word converted. It literally means to turn from one direction to the other. To turn from sin and turn to the Lord. And friend, if you're saved, that's how you got saved. You turn from your sin and you turn to the Lord and begged Him for forgiveness. And that's how we got in. But He said, you have to become like a little child. A child just depends on their parents. They just depend on the adults. They come when they're hungry, asking of the parent. They come when they're thirsty, asking of the parent. when they get cold, they expect the parent to cover them up. When they need something, they're expecting the parent to take care of it. There's a childlike trust. There's a childlike faith. And Jesus said, that's how you got into the kingdom. You were converted. You became as a little child. You had to get not raised or elevated or full of pride. In other words, the opposite had to be true. You had to realize how worthless you were, how helpless you are, how just absolutely lost you were. He said, in essence, if you want to be promoted, you need to realize it's not by trying to lift yourself up. It's by lowering yourself like a little child. It's abasing yourself. Now, notice what Jesus has done. He's talking about being promoted. The disciples are saying, how can we get the best seats? Who deserves the best? So he's talking about promotion. And what he does is brings out a little child, literally gets the little boy up into his lap and holds him and uses this little boy as an example about promotion. Now, who in the world does that? The world doesn't do that. I'll tell you what they do. If they talk about promotion or success or hitting it big, they bring out the brightest and the most successful CEO they can find. Here's a man who's made the money. Here's Bill who's made it big. And if you'll do like Bill, you can get big too. You can get rich too. You can have the mansion on the hill. You can have the Rolls in the garage. Here's Bill, and they use Bill as an example, as someone who's been successful. Here's this lady who has an exercise plan. Well, they don't bring, excuse me, ladies, I'm sorry, some big fat mama out for an example. They bring somebody who's never had an ounce over weight in her life and always been energetic, and you know good and well she doesn't need the plan. You can understand that. But they bring an example to put before you and say, you can be just like Susie if you buy my plan. But Jesus, instead of bringing the CEO or the example the world would expect, he brings a little child. The opposite of what everybody would expect. And you know why? Because the Lord's way is the opposite of man. Oh, we don't get elevated by exalting ourselves and bragging on ourselves and talking about how good and godly we are. We get promoted by humbling ourselves and realizing how worthless we are and how useless we are without Him. Oh, with His help, we can get promoted, but only through Him. He can exalt and He will, but only through Him. Jesus talks about His disciples and how He promoted them, how He elevated them. And He says it takes a childlike faith. It needs to be an abasement. It has to be a humility. Oh, in the world, you get to the top by walking on people and abusing people, going up the ladder and stomping on people as you go. But in Jesus' kingdom, you get to the top, if you will, by humbling yourself and abasing yourself and seeing yourself as worthless as you are. You know what? I believe Jesus was grieved as these disciples started talking about who's the greatest? Who's going to get the high seat? What kind of promotion can we expect when the kingdom comes? I believe it grieved Jesus' heart. You know why? Because here's the master of the universe, and he knows what's ahead. He knows he's heading to the cross. He's heading to Calvary. He knows in a few days there's going to be men that comes and arrest him and abuse him and try him wrongly and hang him on a cross that he does not deserve. And you know what he's going to do? The master of the universe will humble himself to it all. Here's the master of the universe. Here's the God of heaven and earth humbling himself. And his disciples are trying to get to the highest realm, trying to promote themselves, and trying to find prestige and power. I believe it grieved Jesus' heart to see what was going on in the disciples' life. And I believe it grieves him when we look and try to promote ourselves and elevate ourselves. Notice it says in verse 5, "And whoso shall receive such a little child in my name receiveth me." He says, these little children, like this little boy, it's a picture of my disciples. It's a picture of my children who have become like a little child and come to the Father and ask him for forgiveness and have been birthed into the family. And he says the person who receiveth such a child, the person who receives one of my children, it's just like them receiving me. Now the word receiveth has the idea of a homeowner who welcomes travelers into their homes. Back in that day, boy, we wouldn't like it nowadays. If you owned a home and someone came and knocked on your door and asked you to spend the night, it was the expected thing for you to receive them. Do you hear that word? Receive them into your home. So to a weary traveler, you receiving them would be a blessing, would be a help, would be accommodating. You would feed them. You'd give them a place to rest, a place to sleep. And the next day you'd send them on their way. Jesus said a person who receives one of my children, a person who treats one of my children well, a person who wants to be a blessing to one of my children. I'm talking about his family. He said the person who tries to do good to my people, it's just like them doing good to me. Well, you parents understand that. We grandparents understand that. If you want to get on the good side of a grandpa or a grandma, talk good about their grandchildren. And boy, all of a sudden, you got a new friend. You talk about how sweet they are and how nice they are and how blessed they are to have such a sweet grandchild. You talk good about their grandchildren, you get on their good side real good. On the other hand, you talk nasty about them or mistreat them or abuse them, and you get on that grandparent's bad side in a hurry. How you treat them is how you're treating that grandparent or parent. And Jesus said, how you treat my people is exactly how you're treating me. The world doesn't think much about us, but our Father does. The world doesn't love God's people too much, but God does. He said, you treat my people right, it's just like you treating me right. But he's about to say, you treat them wrong, it's just like you treating me wrong. He's talking about his family. He talks about how he promotes his disciples, but he also talks about how he protects his disciples. He said, you treat them just like you treat me. And what you do to them, it's just like what you've done to me. Look in verse 6. But whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depth of the sea. He said, you mess with mine, you're in trouble. You mistreat one of my children, I want to tell you, I know where you live. He said, if you mistreat one of mine, those that believe in me, it would be better if somebody tied a millstone around your neck and threw you into the sea. I'm talking about you would be better to be dead than mistreat one of my children. He's talking about how he protects his disciples, how God protects his family. Notice what it says. Whoso shall offend one of these little ones. The word offend means to cause to stumble. or to trip or to cause the fall. You remember when you was little, young, and mean, and you trip one of your classmates when they were running out on the in the park or out in the school playground? Some of y'all smiling like you used to do that. You understand, or maybe you were the one that got tripped. I don't know. That's exactly what he's saying, to trip up, to cause to stumble. In other words, here's a child of God trying to walk with God, trying to be faithful, trying to do God's will and please him, and here's some booger trips him up, does something to offend, does something to cause that young child or that young believer or that older believer, that child of God, to stumble, to do something wrong, to cause him to fall. He's causing some of God's people to fall, to fail. And he says, when somebody does that, they get on my bad side. Because I protect my disciples. I protect my children. It has the idea of doing something to cause somebody who knows the Lord to do wrong. We can do that easily. We can do that indirectly. Our influence is greater than we realize. How we live and how we talk and how we dress and how we react to things has a greater influence on God's people than we realize. At least it seems like it does. Because there's some who seem like how they live doesn't matter. And their influence to other believers doesn't make a big deal. But God says it does. He said, if you're the kind that does things that make my children stumble, it would be better for you to be dead. Sounds pretty serious. We can influence people. We can make people do wrong by our influence. We can influence people indirectly. We can influence people directly. I wonder how many people would have never been drunks had a friend or a family member not said, let's take the first drink. I wonder how many people are in prison right now for life because someone somewhere said, let's shoplift. And they started the life of sin. Someone's influence caused them to do wrong, and it's ruined their lives. Jesus said, if you're the kind, listen to me, if you're the kind that you don't care how your life influences believers, it would be better for you to be dead. He protects his children. He says, in essence, you're asking for my wrath. You're asking for me to deal with you. You're asking for me to chasten you. You're asking for me to judge you. When your life influences someone to wrong, you are asking me, says God, to deal with you. Because I protect mine. I protect my own. I protect my disciples. Now I just want to say to all of us, if we think how we live doesn't matter, we are so wrong. If we think our influence on others is not important, we are in error. I just want to say something to whoever's here, including me. If we want to live the way we want to live, we ought to get away from every Christian we know. Because the Lord said, if you influence one of mine toward evil, I'm coming after you. I will deal with you. And you don't want God angry at you. Could I remind you just a little bit about the wrath of God? The wrath of God is what sent Adam and Eve out of the garden. The wrath of God is what brought the flood on the entire world. The wrath of God is what destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. The wrath of God is what took Ananias and Sapphira to an early grave. The wrath of God is what took Jesus to the cross. And the wrath of God is something you don't want on your life. But Jesus said, you mess with mine, you're going to make my Father angry. I want to tell you, there's no need in me trying to describe the difficulty I've had this morning knowing what I was going to say today. But I've come to tell us what God said, and I hope we'll listen. He said, I protect mine. I watch after mine. And someone who doesn't respect that and someone who wants to live the way they want to live and not care how that influences my people, they better watch out. It would be better for them to be dead than to face my wrath. It would be better for you to perish in the bottom of the sea than to face my wrath. Somebody says it doesn't matter how I live. Well, it does. Somebody says it doesn't matter how I influence people. Yes, it does. Verse 10 says, take heed that you despise not one of these little ones, for I say that in heaven their angels do always behold the face of my Father which is in heaven. He says, I want to tell you about my family. I protect mine. And I just want to tell you, here's what he's saying. If you think you can live as you please around my people, and it doesn't matter, I just want to warn you, there's some heavenly angels right now looking toward the Father's face, and all they do is they just need a nod. And if he just nods in my direction, if he nods in your direction, they coming after you. You don't mess with mine and get by with it. I protect my own. Now, does that mean we all got a guardian angel? I said Wednesday night, I'll say it again. I believe he's talking about all the angels already, not just one. I'd a lot rather have them all. Hey, one killed 185,000. So all I need is one, but however many I got, there's angels right now saying, hey, I'm going to protect my own. I'm going to protect my Father's people, put it that way. You think your lifestyle doesn't matter? Sure does to the Father. Sure does to the Father. He said there's angels. They're ministering spirits sent forth to minister to the heirs. That's us who know the Lord. And he says, I have angels ready. And all I got to do is nod and say, hey, I've had enough. Go get them. They've said that bad things to my children one time too many. They've lived a sorry life in front of my children one time too many. They've been disrespectful to my people one time too many. Go get them. He protects his people. He protects his disciples. I'm glad that he does. I just want to say to us again before I move on. What we do and what we say and how we live matters. If you want to live half-hearted, that's up to you. But you need to respect those you're influencing. You need to realize the damage you're doing, the hardship you're causing. You're wrecking lives by your lack of dedication. You're influencing people who may want to serve God, but you're influencing them to the negative. You're discouraging them from serving God, and you're under the wrath of God yourself. God said, I'm going to protect mine. Look in verse 7. Woe unto the world because of the offenses. For it must needs that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offenses cometh. That's exactly what I've been trying to say. There's going to be sin in this world, and there's going to be things that influence people to bad, but woe to the person who does the wrong. We're in a world full of sin. And a lot of the excuse that we try to give is everybody else does it. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think we have to be so strict and so stringent and so legalistic. Well, you know what? I believe God has a will for every life. And whether we accept it or want it or agree with it, His will doesn't change. and He wants His people to walk godly before Him and godly before others. And He says if we don't, we pay. We pay. He says, I'm going to protect my people. He says, I want to tell you about how I promote my disciples, and I want to tell you how I protect my disciples, but I want to tell you also how I pursued my disciples. Look on in verse 11 and 12. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which was lost. How think ye, if a man have 100 sheep and one of them had gone astray, doth he not leave the 99 and goeth into the mountains and seeketh that which is gone astray? He says, I want to talk to you about my family. I want to tell you how I promote my disciples when they're humble, when they abase themselves. That's when they get exalted. I want to tell you how I protect my disciples. I am so protective of my disciples, I have a realm of angels getting ready to come and get those who mistreat them. I have the wrath of God waiting for those who live before my disciples in a haphazard way. But He also says, I want to tell you how much my disciples mean to me. I want to tell you how important my family is to me. I want to tell you how much I love them. I loved them enough to where I pursued them. When they were lost, I went after them. When they were lost, I went after them. When they didn't love God, God came after them anyway. When they were away from God, could I understand? Could you listen with me? That's talking about us who are saved. When I was lost in sin, He pursued me. When I didn't want anything to do with God or His way, His word, or His will, He came after me. I was lost in the wilderness like a sheep lost in the mountains. I did not know the direction home, and I couldn't get there if I had. I was hopeless and helpless, and so were you. But He came after us. He pursued us like a shepherd looking for a lost sheep. He came where we were. He came where you were looking for you. That's how much He loves you. That's how much He cares. And I want to say maybe to somebody this morning who's lost, the shepherd, the Father, the Lord is concerned about you. Why would a shepherd leave the comfort of home to go to the mountains, cold and heat and hard bed, sleeping on the ground, searching for a sheep? Why in the world would a shepherd do that? I'll tell you, because of concern, because of love. That shepherd loves the sheep. And God loved you. And that's why He came after you. When you were unloving, when you were unlovable, when you were lost in sin and satisfied to stay there, He came looking for you. When most people gave up on you, when most people said it's too late, they've gone too far, they'll never get saved, the shepherd didn't give up on you. He kept coming. He pursued you. He came where you were because He was concerned, because He was compassionate, and He longed for the communion. Did He need us? Of course not. God doesn't need anything, but He wanted us. He wanted the communion because He loved the sheep. Now, don't get caught up in this little parable. This parable is not saying that someone can be saved and lose their salvation. I'm not talking about that at all. It's picturing God as God over creation. When He created everything, God and man was in communion. Adam and Eve, God, were in communion. But man ran, man left, man deserted, man sinned, and the communion was broken. And since then, God has been pursuing lost people. God has been going after people who have strayed away and living in sin. And He's still doing that, and that's what He did to you if you're saved. And if you're lost this morning, that's what He's doing to you today. He wants you to be saved. The heart of God is seen in these verses. Verse 14, Even so, it is not the will of your Father which is in heaven that one of these little ones should perish. He said, that's why I pursued them. I didn't want any of them going to hell. That's why these disciples are saved now, because I pursued them. I didn't want any of them staying lost. I didn't want any of them going to hell. They all were, but now they aren't. And that's why he came after you. And that's why he seeks you this morning, and if you're lost, he's not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And he proved that at Calvary. The ground is level at the foot of the cross. The rich have to come just like the poor. The rich have to lay aside their riches because it won't buy them heaven. It won't purchase forgiveness. And the poor can come with nothing because whatever they could bring is not enough. That's what makes Calvary so wonderful. That's why it's level at the foot of the cross. The moral and the immoral have to come the same. Those who we would call moral, who say, I'm a good person, I joined Sunday school, I'm a member of the church, I got baptized, I do the best I can, they have to come to Calvary realizing their morality is worthless. They are wretched, they are vile, they are wicked, they are perverted, they are a sinner in spite of their morality. And the immoral, the ungodly, the wicked, the drunkard, the harlot have to come to the Lord as realizing only he can forgive. We all come to Calvary the same, needing him, hopeless without him, trusting him. I want to ask you, have you done that? Have you done that? Now I want to tell you what I've wrestled about this message. What in the world is this message saying to us? I don't want to just come up and holler a while and stop. I think it says to some of us, you're in a family where you're loved. You're in a family where you're loved. I believe it says to some of us, you better watch out, because he's been trying to warn you about your lifestyle, and you've ignored it and shunned it and pushed him aside. But he's warning you this morning. He's warning you because of your lifestyle. He's going to come and deal with you. But your lifestyle is affecting others. I want to tell you something. There's probably somebody here this morning, if you were honest, you've noticed your lifestyle has been affecting somebody else. And I believe the Lord is saying to you this morning, it's time to get down to business and get right. Because number one, God's angry at you. But number two, you're doing damage to more people than just yourself. And later on down the road, when you see the damage and you cry out to God and ask for forgiveness and ask him to fix things, it'll be too late to fix things. There's some damage being done right now in your life that won't be undone, and while you can, you better get right now. That is as heavy on my heart as anything I've dealt with in a long time. And I don't know who I'm talking to, but you do. But I want to say this message, I believe, also says to some lost person, this morning you can be saved. This morning he's coming where you're at, seeking you out. You're in the wilderness of sin. You are lost. Listen to this. Lost, blind, in darkness, and don't know which way to go. But he's come where you're at to lead you out, to forgive you, to save you. If you'll just take his hand and say, yes, I'm coming to you. I believe, I accept, I repent, I believe on you. I trust you. Let's stand together.